you at the show. This is Eric Schacht in the studio once again with Linda Evans to bring you half hour of all of the information and excitement going on in the local CU theater community scene. Linda, we were at a show last night.
Live in person. Well, it was a dress rehearsal, but yes.
Oh, come on.
No, but I mean, we don't.
Okay, right. Nobody missed out who could have seen it unless they were on the invite list.
Exactly.
But I'm not going to diminish the
what
we saw.
Right. We saw our town.
Yes. And I.
In Danville.
Said, yeah. So, I mean, the CU at the show, you know, we might have to maybe CV at the show for Champaign and Vermilion County. But then we've got McLean County. So
right.
I think we just have to figure the Big Ten has had way more than 10 teams in it for a long time, right?
Right.
And so CU at the show can, it obviously bleeds out, as our actors do.
Right.
And probably as the WEFT sound waves. I'm sure you can pick up this show outside of Champaign.
Well, especially since you can stream it online. You can make it up anywhere.
Yes. So we're a global platform for information about Central Illinois local theater. Because, you know, the theater started in other cities more so than it has in our own.
Right, right.
There's just no doubt about that.
Bloomington, Normal, and Danville have really been going for it lately. So kudos to them.
Yeah, and so last night, Red Mask Players, we saw it was an invited dress of Our Town. It opens tomorrow night at the amazing Fisher Theater.
Yeah, it was your first time in the Fisher Theater.
First time in the Fisher. And
what did you think?
I was really blown away. I mean, I think you sent me pictures when you went and saw
Bright Star
last year. And it was impressive. But I think until you get in the space, and we climbed up all three tiers of balconies. We ended up sitting in the wings. I don't know what are the wing boxes called.
Right, I don't know off the top of my head, but yeah, no, it was really cool. We were the only ones in that area, and everybody was unmasked, or nobody was masked, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's such a big space. It's easy to socially distance, and it felt very safe. And we're vaccinated, so that helps. And it was very nice.
And we got to talk afterwards with not just the director Paul Strain, but also with the manager of the Fisher Theater, and he's got stories to tell about.
We'll have him on sometime.
Yeah, and just the odyssey that theater has been on since the early 80s of just getting itself back on its feet. And man, is it on its feet. And Red Mask Players were lucky enough to be able to collaborate with them, because Red Mask doesn't always do their shows at Fisher. And it's perfect for this. They have, they had the stage is Spartan, as it always is apparently for Our Town. It's only the second time I've ever seen Our Town. And set incredibly minimalistic, but I still noticed that they made a choice to use the full depth of the stage. Like, you know, there are probably four different curtains that could have been pulled to be with space that wasn't necessarily being used.
Right.
So it was very expansive, which I think is what you think about with this show, with the period in 1900, and it's, I don't know, it's just.
And you're supposed to be visualizing the whole town, and I thought it was, I've seen it. Well, my oldest has been in it three times at three different theaters, so I'm pretty used to the show. But I thought Rodney Woodworth did a wonderful job.
Yeah. I've seen him, because I guess his role in Goblins and Gravediggers was kind of similar, right?
He's
a storyteller.
He's got a great voice for narrator. So he was the stage manager.
Yeah, and I think I remember telling you that he reminded me of was it Burl Ives who we found out that it was?
I think so.
The voice of the
Rudolph.
Of the snowman. The narrator.
Yeah.
The narrator. And just kind of being so good-naturedly and folksy, just telling, you know, weaving the pieces together, taking us on this little journey of 12 years in a small town through the happiness and sadness and heartbreak.
Right, right. So great job to Red Mask. And I believe it's a fundraiser for Red Mask. So you should head out there this weekend if you can. Check out the Fisher Theater. Enjoy live theater.
Yes. And I wanted to also give a shout out to the role of Emily is played by Amanda Brown. We found out just 2 days ago that she was stepping into the role,
right?
To fill somebody had not been able to fulfill their
and you would commitment. Never have known that.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Right. Apparently, it's just the second full run for her, and we thought she was going to be on book. We were prepped for that, and she was amazing. I just kept thinking, okay, obviously, the person who'd been rehearsing this for months has come back and done this because right. she was great. And so we have more information about the time of the show, because it's 7:30 tomorrow night, 2 p.m. Saturday, and then 7:30 Saturday night. Those are the next three shows coming up, and I think that that's the entirety of the run. It's just a three-show run.
And we're going to see more live theater this weekend.
Yeah, how about that? Out of the Box, which is being presented by Heartland, and 2 weeks ago, we had Len Childers in,
right?
Who's directing this, and it is,
and he's one of the people telling his story too, I believe. So
right, Out of the Box, featuring diverse stories of how we think, feel, and live. It's stories about identity, focusing on personal experiences. It's a very diverse group. I know that issues of race and sexuality and other sorts of just fantastic contemporary stories are going to be told.
And that's going to be outside in Normal from 5 to 6:30 on the 25th and 26th. But because we have so much rain, they might have to use their rain date, which I believe is Sunday.
And because we have so much substantive interview coming up, we probably should just move on and introduce our guest.
Right.
We are lucky enough to be joined in our studio.
And now we have the pleasure of introducing Don Chandro. He's the executive director and the artistic director of Coalescence in Bloomington Normal. Hi, welcome. And can you tell us a little bit about Coalescence? We're kind of new to.
The Coalescence Theater Project exists to incite our community to thoughtful action. We are, for all intents and purposes, a social justice, racial justice, gender justice theater. Our mission is to utilize theater to understand, acknowledge, and dismantle all forms of systemic oppression as we explore identity and our place in a global community. That, in a nutshell, is our mission. And anything that we do hangs on that mission.
So how long have you been around?
The concept for Coalescence Theater Project has existed for about the past 12 years. We started under a different name, and we were under a board that managed three different theater companies, and it didn't seem to work. And so we made the decision to leave that organization at that time, and then we decided just to recreate ourselves with a new name, and really just sharpened our image as well, and sharpened our mission as well.
When did you do that?
That was in 2018.
Okay, because when you read the description, it was inspiring, and what it sounded a little bit like was various sort of statements that theater groups were putting out last summer as something they were going to try to do or incorporate, but it's the very essence of Coalescence.
Oh yeah, we've been doing this for years. This is a part of our DNA. This is not something that we've been forced to do. 12 years ago, when I sat down and talked to somebody from one of the social justice organizations in Bloomington and told them exactly what it was that I wanted to do and what we wanted to accomplish, they said, you're only where theaters are going to have to be in 10 years.
Right.
And he said, and at that point, and now looking back in retrospect, he was really very prescient when he said that,
right?
Because it is true. Also, this mission of ours has sharpened this past year too. The mission before did include the terms inclusion and diversity and equity. And we took those all out because the thing is, it started to look like everybody, businesses, companies, everybody was using those terms as corporate slogans.
Right, they're buzzwords that may not mean anything.
Correct. There's a wonderful article by Esther Arma who has come up with the term emotional justice. And I love Esther Arma a lot, and that term of emotional justice has been kind of one of the underpinnings of Coalescence Theater Project. And she has an article that's called Statementism in Tweakonomics, where companies will come out with a really nice sounding statement, but then what they'll do is they'll only tweak around the edges to make changes. And they won't make any real fundamental changes. The fundamental change is already us, because the decisions that we've made to be who we are were made years ago. The thing is, there's a systemic whiteness in all organizations, including the theaters, including theater community. And that systemic whiteness is a sense of privilege that is really difficult for theaters to back away from, because they make money off of it.
Right.
Yeah, and we were taking note of that yesterday, and we've been talking here on the show about Our Town, which we saw in Danville last night, and it was strange to us to be getting back to the theater, and even after everything that happened last year and all the great mission statements and everything that theaters companies puts out, there we were again in a theater, only white people in the audience, only white people on the stage, show by a white person, and it just felt off for that reason. I mean, great show otherwise, but it seemed as though where is the change, and the platitudes have to be ringing empty to the people it really matters for.
Absolutely. One of the smartest things that we've done as a theater is to form a playwright advisory board. And that playwright advisory board reflects a diversity in culture, in diversity in race, and it also in region as well. Because the thing is, I think a lot of times here in Central Illinois as theaters, we become parochial. Yes. We become so, we become Midwesternized. Mm-hmm. And that Midwesternization of the organization insulates us from everything else that's happening in the real world. So the thing is, as a theater especially, you have to reach out. We've been invited to perform in Chicago for an international play festival. We're going to be doing it for the Indian Consulate. There's going to be theaters there. There's going to be theaters there that are not English-speaking theaters. And the play that we're doing is Behind the Curtain of COVID. And we were nominated for a National Digital Theater Award for that particular production. So what we're going to be doing, this is kind of meta, we're going to be doing a play that's meant for digital performance live. And so it's going to be kind of fun. It's going to be fun. And we were specifically invited to do that play. So it's like, okay, we'll make it work. We'll make it work. We'll have fun with it.
You must be doing a lot right to be invited to do something like that. Do you have an actual physical space in Bloomington Normal and in normal times?
We're an itinerant theater. And like most all indie theaters are, we're an itinerant theater. We've performed at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. We've performed at First Christian Church in Bloomington. We've performed at the Normal Theater in Bloomington. We'll perform wherever anybody has a space for us to perform in, and that's where we'll be. What the past year plus has done for us is kind of given us a stability, because people now know where they can find us. And the thing is, most theaters have considered digital theater to be a bridge from COVID to going back to live theater. And anymore, I think what we're going to do is we're going to consider digital theater to be part of who we are as well. Okay. Because ultimately, digital theater is inclusive. Digital theater is accessible, and digital theater is sustainable.
Right.
Right. And I guess it's part of what you were saying with the accessibility of it, but just the ability to transmit it beyond your boundaries, beyond your geographic boundaries. And that's really exciting. And I look at the, just even your social media is outstanding. All of the Juneteenth recognition, promotion, acknowledgement that you've done. And now I see that you're also soliciting for a Black Lives, Black Words showcase that's gonna be happening this fall. And I think if you confined yourself to your geographic area for things like that, it wouldn't work.
That's Reginald Edmond up in Chicago. He's been a really good friend and supporter of ours. He's also part of our Playwright Advisory Board. And he has the project that he's developed up in Chicago where he goes to different areas. I mean, he's been to the UK, he's been to the Guthrie, and now he's coming down to Central Illinois. But the thing is, he believes in what we do too. That's the other thing. But as far as Black Lives, Black Words, we're really excited about that. That's going to be a totally Black run project. That's hands off from anybody who's white in the organization. It's going to be curated slash produced by Catherine D. Brown, who's also on our board, and she's taking the solicitations. So if anybody has a script, a 10-minute script, the prompt is, "Do Black Lives Still Really Matter?" Then we're accepting those 10-minute scripts now.
That's great. And now, of course, you're here today to talk about the play that's opening, premiering online tomorrow, which is Boyd by Anna Ziegler. And you're doing this in conjunction with the Prairie Pride Coalition. Just, can you briefly describe how that partnership came to be and what Prairie Pride is?
We've had that relationship with Prairie Pride for probably the past 5 years. We've done two new play festivals. One was, they were the Voices of Pride Festival. And then we did a production I can't remember the name of the play, but the playwright was Ian Field Stewart, who is coming into some prominence now and in the area of transgender rights, and we were able to bring her out. She was an Illinois Wesleyan grad, and Illinois Wesleyan helped us, and Prairie Pride helped us, and it was exciting. That was in 2019, Dave Bentlin, who is the president of the Prairie Pride Coalition Board, came to me and he said, I'd like to see this script done. And I've known about the script, but it wasn't on the top of the list of scripts that I was thinking about doing. Mm-hmm. But I reread it and I thought, you know what, this could be a really exciting script for us to do. And I said, I'm going to have to figure out if we can do it digitally. And
from a writing standpoint?
Yeah, with people in all different locations.
Right.
And so after figuring that out, I went back to him and we decided to go ahead and do it. So
aren't familiar with Boy? I mean, it caught my attention because I have a transgender 13-year-old and a lot of transgender, non-binary people in my life. So I was super excited when I saw that you guys were, it looks different than anything else I've seen. So can you kind of describe what it's about?
It's based on a true story. It's based on the story of the Reimer twins, where one is in a botched circumcision, is deformed, mm-hmm, and mutilated. And a doctor comes in, and the doctor is based on Dr. John Money. The doctor comes in, and the doctor says, "This is what needs to be done. I have this theory that if someone is raised a certain way, that's what they will become." So it has elements of conversion therapy in it as well. So he's really very unethical, and he uses bad science to do what he thinks is necessary to complete this person. And this also speaks to the intersex population too, because with intersex population, the discussion is don't make the decision for the child, let the child grow into the decision so that they choose who they are, or just if they want to stay who they are. So the problem is that we do live in a binary culture. And where when decisions are made, especially when they were made years ago, they were made based on binary choices.
Well, I think that any parent who buys a doll for their daughter and a gun for their son is doing a version of this, regardless of the of the cis nature of the kid or what they think it is. There's this gender stereotyping that is hard, and it affects us to who we are today as.
And it's difficult for anyone who does not consider themselves fully part of one gender community or the other.
Right. And so much in our society is gender based. I mean, a lot of our language is gender based when it doesn't have to be, and so much, putting people in boxes and. I'm so glad that it's being discussed more. When I was a kid, it was just never even discussed. So I think it's amazing that plays like this even exist.
Was the decision to have a dramaturge something that you have done regularly, or was it because of the particular subject matter that you were facing with this show?
I'll say both. We've started to use dramaturgs on a regular basis, especially because that research portion of the script should be carried out by someone else, and they can handle all of the writing. Then they pass that to the marketing person. The marketing person then can use what that research for marketing purposes. So it all goes hand in hand. They work on both ends of the play. And Connor, she has been just amazing. I really couldn't have asked for a better dramaturg for the show.
Have you worked with her before?
Not at all. I worked with she's an ISU student, and the faculty member who she works with is Ki-Yun Nam, and we've done plays by Ki-Yun, and Ki-Yun is also he acted as dramaturg for our last play, Requiem for a Brother, and I asked Ki-Yun, I said, listen, I need a trans a trans dramaturg, specifically,
right?
And so that's how we got Connor. We're going to use Connor again. Connor is going to help us develop a whole transgender theater series.
Wow,
that's
exciting.
Tell us a little bit about your cast and the audition process. How you did it with people spread out as they are.
We cast digitally, virtually. I had people in mind for the cast already. I guess like any director, you already kind of have an idea of who you want to cast, and then you're surprised, and all the people that you said you'd be perfect for this part, you have to tell them that they didn't get cast.
Right. You have to be careful saying, come audition, but maybe not saying.
That's it. But the thing is, that's the nature of being a director. You want as many people to come and audition as possible, and actually you are asking people that are people that will fit the roles. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, during the rehearsal process, there's a chemistry that takes place that you just can't deny. When you see a spark between actors, it's like, for instance, I was telling you a little earlier, my intent was to cast the family as Black, because I wanted to bring out the whole element of unethical testing. Mm-hmm. And I thought I'd end up with a completely Black family. And then Matthew Green came, and Matthew read, and he had this chemistry with the woman that I'm casting as the mother, and the man I'm casting as the son, and it was like, it was just undeniable. It was like he belonged there. He belonged there.
It just clicked, right?
That's
yeah.
Right. We saw the promotional little clip that Matthew made that was posted on YouTube about why this show is in particularly relevant and important to him. And of course, he's a great actor and director anyway, but when you bring also a personal connection and kind of like an empathetic view to it, I can understand why that was an obvious casting decision for you.
I'm really excited about who you cast as Boy, because I've also seen promotional videos. Can you tell me more about him?
Oh yeah, Terrence Mayfield is an ISU student. We've worked with him before. He was in a production of a digital production that we did of Until the Flood by Dale Orlander Smith, and he's just a raw natural talent. In fact, he won the Irene Ryan Award this past year, and Irene Scholarship Award this last year, which is a national award. And so it's really a wonderful to have him as part of the cast. He says that this is one of the most difficult roles that he's ever done, because he has to switch from being Adam to being Samantha. Mm-hmm. And it's done in a very theatrical way, because when the play is done live, you see the character walk from one place with a change of lighting and become the other character, not affecting any kind of a voice or not. But the thing is you just got to see the boy is always there. Right. That's the important thing. The boy is always there.
Thank you very much, Don, for coming in and talking to us at See You at the Show. Boy by Anna Ziegler is going to be super powerful. It premieres tomorrow night. You can find links to it on our Facebook page, and you can also find links to it on the Coalescence Theater Project Facebook page. These are going to be live streamed on June 25th, 26th, 27th at 7:30 p.m. So that's tomorrow and then through the weekend.
And that's the only time. So if you miss it, you miss it. So definitely check it out.
And similarly, Out of the Box is going to be happening outside in Bloomington at 5 p.m. tomorrow and Saturday, June 26th. Our Town opening in Danville tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. at the Fisher Theater. So
you have three things. This is your homework, people. You need to at least go to one of them. You don't want to miss this.
And this is so cool. This is our transition back to normal. We have this weekend, we have
a busy theater weekend.
But we've got one exclusively online, one that's outside,
right,
doing without interaction between. It's just going to be individual.
And one in a huge space where you can socially
with
distance.
A big ensemble show. And I actually don't think anybody even touches each other.
In our town?
Anyway, congratulations to all the theater makers. We're coming back to the show. See you at the show. Happy to be here. Surfability Freakout coming up now.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM.